I know that sound well. It's an Echelon Stride 6 folding treadmill, one I bought her as a goodbye present to help with her recovery. And she's running. Hard. She shouldn't be going that fast. It's only been a month since I took her cast off and she went on her way, meeting up with the troop as they returned back to Texas. I frown as I approach the RV. A sudden burst of anxiety floods my veins as I tighten my hand into a fist and rap 3 times on the door. The rhythm of the running footsteps doesn't change. I knock again. I shift on my feet, clear my throat. I wait, but there's no change. Rose, I yell on the 3rd knock. I knew you'd love that thing, but come open the door. No answer. She must be wearing headphones, so I grasp the door handle and start to pull it open. I only make it 1 or 2 when Rose is there, her hand braced against the edge of the door to keep it from opening and a wild, panicked look in her eyes. But the sound of running doesn't stop. There's someone else here.
Doc!
She breathes, adjusting the belt of her robe, then pushing damp hair from her forehead. She's cut it into a bob, the damp waves and curls skimming across the smooth column of her neck. Her eyes dart to the direction of the sound and back again.
What are you doing here? I didn't expect you for another couple of hours.
Dying. That's what I'm doing. Clearly dying of total embarrassment. I'm sorry. I run my hand through my hair and back away a step. My skin is burning. My heart thrashes against my ribs. My vision has narrowed as though nothing exists outside the things I wish I could unsee. Like the damp blotches on the purple silk from her wet hair. The blush in her cheeks, the distress in her mahogany eyes. I texted, but I'm sorry, I didn't know you'd have someone else here. I'll leave. Fionn, you fucking fool. This isn't a relationship, you said so yourself. What the hell did you expect? You have no right to be upset. Just go. I flash a tight smile at Rose, but I can't bear to see the pity in her eyes. So I turn away. I'll get the fuck out of here and find the next flight home and lick my wounds with a bottle of bourbon and we'll forget this moment ever happened. We'll go back to being friends. No benefits. Or maybe just doctor and patient. Jesus fucking Christ.
Doc, stop.
Rose's delicate hand wraps around my forearm in a talon grip. Part of me wants to pull away and keep walking, but I don't. Not when she whispers a single word. Filling it with a desperate note.
Please.
My brows tighten as I take in the way her gaze darts across our surroundings. She tugs on my arm, towing me toward her RV. I don't argue, though I don't exactly stride after her either. But she doesn't give up, and she doesn't let go. Not even when she opens the door, tossing me a wary glance over her shoulder. I enter the RV. A shirtless man runs at a punishing pace on the treadmill that fills the narrow aisle between the sofa and the little dining table. His chest is covered with cheap tattoos. His skin glistens with sweat.
I'm gonna beat your record,
he declares with a crazed grin, his eyes latched to Rose.
I should go.
No, wait.
Though I try to pull away, Rose refuses to relinquish my arm. She gives the guy a grimace of a smile and a thumbs up.
Keep going, Chad. Maybe you'll beat me after all.
When Chad gives her a double thumbs up in reply, Rose tows me closer to the front of the vehicle, not letting me go until she seems certain I won't try to push past her to leave. There's a chittering sound of an animal, and a raccoon's face suddenly appears from the driver's seat.
Is that Barbara?
Yeah?
Rose says through a pinched smile. She blushes when I raise my brows in a wordless question.
When I left Hartford, I drove past your clinic and saw her trying to break in. She fell from the vent by the roof. She hurt her paw. I couldn't just leave her to fend for herself.
So you took her?
Pretty much.
A wild, rabid raccoon?
Barbara hisses. But Rose doesn't seem to take that as proof of my point.
She's not rabid. She's pretty talented, actually. Cheryl's been training her with the poodles. She had her debut show last week.
I open my mouth to say something, but my brain can't seem to sort through the many questions I have fast enough to land on a single one. Chad, however, is ready to fill the void.
She has a pet raccoon, he declares from the treadmill. Isn't that badass?
I let out an audible ugh and refocus my attention on Rose. You really don't have to explain, Rose. Well, more detail about the raccoon is probably warranted, but not about the guy. We never agreed to be exclusive.
Thanks for the reminder, you fucking clown, but I do have some standards,
she says as she rolls her eyes and crosses her arms over her chest, her brows knitting together for the briefest moment before her expression smooths to a veneer of barely restrained fury.
Dudes with tattoos made with a Bic pen in their garage don't fit the bill, you know?
Then what the hell is going on?
A sinking feeling drops through my chest to simmer in my guts when Rose gnaws her lip.
Spit it out!
He should be dead,
she hisses.
At least that's what Sloane told me when I texted her. I gave him double what she suggested.
What?
I laced his churros with enough speed to choke a gorilla. He puked all over me and then started pacing around in circles, so I brought him here and stuck him on the treadmill while I got cleaned up. I think he might have taken some other shit before I got to him. It didn't take much convincing to get him to go for a little run, but then again, I might have told a lie or two about letting him fuck me in the ass if he beat my non-existent treadmill record.
I blink at Rose, trying to process everything that just spilled out of her mouth. Churros, speed, gorilla, ass-fucking. I shake my head and try to return to the medical part of her confession, though it's a struggle. I finally land on, you gave him amphetamines? Rose snorts.
A lot of amphetamines.
Why?
He deals study drugs to local high school and college kids when he's not beating up his girlfriend, so it didn't seem like it'd be a stretch if he took a little too much and wound up dead. Fuck around and find out. I was just hoping the finding out part would come a little more easily.
And your plan now is what, exactly?
I don't know,
she says with an irritated flick of her hand in my direction.
Maybe to make him run until his heart explodes in his chest and he bleeds from his eyeballs or some shit? I'm not a scientist.
We turn toward the man. His pace is relentless. When we face each other once more, Rose juts her chin out and tightens her arms across her chest, determined not to balk beneath my cold and clinical stare.
I don't think he's just going to magically die on your treadmill, Rose.
A girl can dream.
Aren't you worried about what will happen if he does?
I had a great plan to ditch his body at the fishing hole off Loop Road, but I guess I'll just have to wing it. Granzy seemed pretty confident it would work out anyway. But it's a good thing you're here, just in time for trouble whatsoever, right, Doc?
I give her a flat glare and then grasp her shoulders just long enough to keep her rooted in one spot so I can slip past her. When I stop at the treadmill, Chad gives me a beaming grin despite the effort it takes to keep running. I should probably take his pulse, which I'm sure is past 200 beats per minute, or at least point him in the direction of a hospital. Hippocratic oath and all that shit. But then, who am I to crush Rose's dreams? It's not like Chad is asking for medical assistance. And if Rose has gone to this much effort, the guy is surely no saint. I'm probably doing humanity more good than harm by just letting him live or die by the rules of natural selection. I drag a hand down my face. Christ. With a fleeting, suspicious glance toward Rose, I turn my attention back to the man before me.
How you feeling, Chad? Ready to take a break? Nah, bro. In that case, how about we take this run to the great outdoors? Yeah, man,
he says through panting breaths.
I'm ready to take on the fucking world.
I press the emergency stop button on the treadmill and Chad stumbles before jumping onto the foot rails. Disappointed that he didn't fall on his face, I turn and hold open the door of the RV.
Great, do a few laps of the grounds or whatever. We'll catch up. You sure? I'm a doctor. I never lie. Rose barks a laugh behind me. I shoot her a glare over my shoulder and she throws her hands up in surrender. Turning my attention back to Chad, I grab his wrist and tug him toward the open door. His pulse thrums like hummingbird wings beneath my fingertips. We'll come find you. Promise. Chad gives me a thumbs up, his go-to move, I guess, then steps out into the clearing. With a deep breath of cool evening air, he raises his fists above his head. Fucking A, Clown Town.
Fucking A,
Rose mutters beside me. And then Chad takes off running at full speed. He's pretty quick, I say. We watch him sprint in a wide circle, then he shifts his trajectory toward the white picket fence that surrounds the fairgrounds.
Give a man a shit ton of drugs and the promise of ass-fucking and he'll do anything. Even knit doilies.
Rose pivots a slow turn on her heel to pin me with a sardonic grin, a devious gleam flickering in her eyes.
Oh, wait. You started that hobby with neither of those two motivators.
I already told you. I thought the Suture Sisters was a fight club, and it's called crochet, not knitting.
My bad.
We turn our attention back to Chad as he picks up speed. His naked back glistens in the dim light. His legs and arms pump at an almost inhuman pace. His strides lengthen as he nears the fence. Not sure hurdles are a great idea, I say, scratching my stubble.
He's committed now.
Chad lets out a whoop of determination as he barrels toward his target. And then, one foot catches on a rock. He pitches forward at the fence, his startled shout spooking a flock of starlings. That's... He comes down hard on the pointed ends of the pickets. A visceral cry of pain is sliced short. The setting sun illuminates a pulsing mist of blood. His body jerks and twitches. Not good. A garbled liquid breath sputters from his lungs. Chad's body convulses, then goes limp, his head suspended from a picket and the rest of his body hanging against the blood-stained slats. We stand unmoving in a long moment of shocked silence. Rose reaches forward and starts to pull the door closed.
Well, maybe hurdles were a stretch.
Rose, I hiss, pushing the door open. She doesn't let go of the handle and pulls back with equal determination. I'm a doctor. I have to go help him.
Help him to what, exactly? Undie? Good luck with that.
He could still be alive. Call 911.
Hard pass.
You do realize that someone is going to find him and they could very well notice that his tracks lead straight back to your RV, right? Rose heaves a lengthy sigh and relinquishes her hold on the door handle. Before I can slip past her, she blocks my path with her hand braced against the frame.
Just don't try too hard, Doc. He's still a piece of shit.
I'll take that under advisement, I say with a roll of my eyes. I pull her hand from the doorway and lead the way down the steps. None of the circus performers or crew are out in the clearing. We jog toward the fence where Chad's body is draped, slowing as we draw closer. And though I listen for any sounds of life, nothing comes. I guess it should come as no surprise when we finally take in the extent of the damage. The pointed end of the picket is lodged deep in his throat. I'm guessing he severed his spinal column. I check for a pulse anyway, even though I know I'm not going to find one next to the gaping wound and the wooden stake that obstructs his airway. Blood pours in a thick rivulet down the picket, shimmering in the dim light. Yeah, he's definitely dead, I say as I lift my hand from his neck.
Is that your professional diagnosis?
Rose leans over the fence to take a closer look at his open, unseeing eyes and the crimson stream that drips from his slack mouth. She seems to quickly regret her efforts to overcome her squeamishness and clears her throat in a failed attempt to hide a gagging cough as she steps back.
I thought the blood drool was a pretty good clue, personally.
Call 911, smartass.
You first.
I roll my eyes and withdraw my phone, but I don't dial 911.
Not when Rose is watching me with her enormous eyes, a current of worry buzzing through their mahogany hues. I sigh and lower the device to my side. "What's going on?" I ask, gesturing toward Chad's body. Rose doesn't look his way.
"I started it,"
I figured. "Why?"
"You could probably take a guess. Or did you miss the part where I said he was a piece of shit?"
"That's not what I meant." I hold her gaze steady as Rose's head tilts, but the blush in her cheeks makes me think she knows exactly what I'm getting at. "I meant, why are you doing this? You clearly can't stomach the gore."
"I can too."
"And you're hunting down these men you have seemingly no connection with. But you don't seem to have much experience doing it." Rose crosses her arms. "As far as I can tell, you're seizing opportunity as it comes and you're getting away with it by sheer luck. It's a fucking miracle that Eric Donovan didn't wash up somewhere with staples in his eyelids." She snorts.
"That was pretty cool."
"Rose," I say, taking a step closer, "why are you doing this? Why are you risking getting caught? Why?"
"Because not everyone gets that chance, Fionn,"
she snaps, sudden tears well in her eyes, but she blinks them away, hiding them beneath a simmering rage.
"Not everyone is strong enough or lives long enough to fight back."
We stare at each other, Rose with her arms crossed, me with the phone still clutched in my hand, thoughts of calling 911 drifting further from my mind.
"I've been in their shoes. My folks were such a fucking mess that I spent most of childhood with my gran until she died. And then back I went to that fucking shithole. A piece of shit dad, in and out of jail. A mom so broken she couldn't look after me. I was about to repeat the same cycle as the hell I lived in. I was only 15 when my first boyfriend hit me."
Rose's gaze drops to the ground, and she shakes her head, her arms falling to her sides. When she looks up at me once more, it's not just the pain of inescapable memories that I see in her eyes. It's not just determination, it's a plea.
"I got out. I took my chance and ran away. But it's not enough to just be one of the lucky ones. Not when men like Matt or Eric or Chad will just find a next victim. Someone new to belittle and torture and sometimes even kill. Women like Lucy or Naomi or Chad's girlfriend, Sienna, they need more than just an open door. They need a broken cage. How can I say no when they ask for my help?"
My shoulders fall. I press my eyes closed, lower my head. "Help," she says from memory, her voice untarnished by time. And she's asking for my help now. "The Sparrow, that's what the women call you," I say, and she nods.
"Have you ever heard of Julia Tofana?"
she asks. I shake my head when I open my eyes and meet her unwavering stare.
"She was an Italian woman in the 17th century. She made a poison from arsenic and belladonna. As the story goes, she disguised it as face cream, so all a woman would have to do is come to her asking for Acqua Tofana. Many of those women were just like Lucy, and I thought I could be just like Julia. For a while, I guess I was, but sometimes..."
she says, turning her gaze from mine, her eyes glassy as they fix to the horizon.
"Sometimes you fuck up. You make a mistake. And when I fucked up, it cost the wrong person their life."
She raises her left wrist to me. I've seen the small flower tattooed there before, the initials VR beside it. When she finally meets my eyes, they're filled with pain, with loss and guilt. I might not have all the pieces, but my imagination fills in the blanks with vivid detail. And suddenly the picture that once seemed so disjointed comes into view. Her determination to overcome her squeamish nature. Her apparent lack of fear for the consequences she might face. Even her declaration every time I call her out. "I started it," she always says. She's determined to never place the blame on the women who have asked for her help. She will not put the responsibility of the killing on them. And she's punishing herself too. For fucking up. For losing someone she never meant to hurt. I don't press Rose for more details.
I just reel her into an embrace. It doesn't matter how tightly I hold on to her. The ache in my chest doesn't subside. I know the kinds of pain she's felt. I've endured similar suffering, the kind that scars you in a way that never fully heals. But somehow, it's worse being powerless to take those wounds from Rose than it is living them myself. After a long moment, I take her shoulders and back her away just far enough that I can lower my head and look into her eyes. I need you to go back to the RV, I say, already knowing I'll be met with her resistance.
No, Fionn, I started it.
No, you didn't. Rose shakes her head, but I stay locked on her shining eyes. You finished it, and I'm helping you. But I need you to go back to the RV and stay there. I'm going to call the ambulance. The police are going to come, and they're going to find exactly what this is. A stupid piece of shit who died in a dumbass accident. Rose gives me a watery huff of a laugh and shakes her head again.
I don't want to leave you to clean up my mess.
And I will not leave you to do this alone. You and me, Rose, we came from a similar hell, and I want to help you. But the only way I can do that is to make sure you're safe. Over there. I point to the RV. Rose looks toward it, but I can still feel her hesitation. Lights off. Don't come out unless someone knocks. You were asleep, and you didn't see a thing. With a kiss to her temple, I turn Rose's shoulders and push her in the direction of the motorhome. She takes two steps toward the RV and stops to face me with a weary, worried smile.
Thank you for your help, Fionn.
I nod once. Her smile brightens. And then she turns away, walking back to the RV in the dusky evening light. No one ever asked me for help the way she did that first time we met. And I realize now, as she steps into the motor home and turns off the lights, that no one has thanked me for it either. Not until Rose.
Confection. Rose.
Well?
Fionn asks as I enter the RV and plop myself down on the small couch across from the dining table. He sets a pile of black yarn aside and regards me with a worried sweep of his gaze.
What did Jose say?
The police are treating it as an accident, apparently. There's nothing really to say otherwise. Chad's kind of known for being a local piece of shit and has an arrest record as long as my leg. So something makes me think they're not going to look too hard once they find a shit ton of drugs in his system. I sigh and wrap my fingers across the surface of the table. We won't open this weekend, so I guess I have a few more days off. Maybe not the worst timing? Fionn simply nods in reply, and watches as I blow out a long breath. It's been 4 days since the Chad incident, and though it seems like everything is going to be fine, it still feels as though a turbine has lodged itself in my chest, like the blades keep spinning in the wind, but the energy has nowhere to go. Part of it might be nerves, sure. Anxiety for the unknown, the risk of getting caught. But another part of it is sheer excitement. The residual thrill, getting away with something bad, but so very, very good. And it unleashes all kinds of dark and dangerous magic in me.
Everything all right with you?
He finally asks, and I realize I've been smiling to myself, probably a grin that seems diabolical. Though, judging by the way Fionn narrows his eyes and watches me, I don't think he minds. Yeah, I just...
Have an itch that needs to be scratched?
I snort a laugh. He's still trying to bite down on a smirk, but he can't help but let it curl one corner of his lips. It's so fucking sexy that my core twists with immediate need. That sounds so wrong given the circumstances. Fionn's head tilts as he tries to decipher my meaning. I wave his confusion off with a flap of my hand. Speaking of which, is that my sex swing you're working on? I ask with a nod to the yarn sitting on the table.
Maybe. Thought it should be a high priority project.
Yeah, I say, letting the word linger as my imagination takes me to all sorts of scenarios, all of which involve Fionn and tensile bamboo yarn.
You sure you're okay?
Fionn asks. His eyes narrow in an assessing gaze, but I can see a hint of amusement in their depths. I clear my throat and shrug. Just pent-up energy.
Maybe you should set up the treadmill.
Actually, I say, uncrossing and recrossing my legs, a motion Fionn's eyes snap to. I was thinking a run outside might be a good idea.
Okay. Want me to join you?
Yes and no. I get up again, and I feel the confusion in his gaze linger on me as I pull off my long-sleeve top, leaving my tank top behind. My weight shifts from side to side, my muscles already tense with anticipation. I didn't get to say thank you after you helped with all that whole impaling situation. Fionn's brow furrows and he lifts his shoulder. He's trying to look nonchalant about it. As nonchalant as he can, I guess.
It's okay.
I mean, I wanted to thank you. Thank you. I can see the exact moment my words assemble themselves in his brain. Fionn's eyes darken and fix to mine. His muscles tense. His pulse pounds in his neck. He starts rising from his seat, but I hold up a hand to stop him. Hold up there, Duck. I didn't say I would make it easy on you. This is a circus, after all. I thought we should have a little fun. And trust me when I say it's something you'll enjoy. You've even said so before. A lazy grin creeps across my face. I take my time, examine my chipped nail polish, blow out a long, long, long breath. My gaze flows up the length of his body, from his socked feet to the jeans that hug the curve of dense muscle in his thighs, to his tapered waist, to his biceps that seem to challenge the hem of his shirt, to his neck that shifts with a swallow, and finally, his eyes. Those eyes that are nearly black, locked to me as if soldered to my face. I saunter one step closer. Close your eyes. Reluctantly, he does. No peeking. He crisscrosses his heart. I snort a laugh and he grins. You're not so innocent, but nice try.
I swear, doctors never lie.
Sure. Well, use that big doctor brain of yours and count to 30 for me, and then open them. One of his eyes cracks open as he gives me a scrutinous look. What did I literally just say?
Okay.
He concedes, raising his hands in defeat.
1, 2, 3.
Slower.
4.
The pause lengthens, and I creep backward toward the door.
5.
I sneak down the steps and silently slip outside the motorhome.
6.
He says, as I close the door. And then I take off, running. I head past the motorhomes and the closed game stands and silent amusement rides, darting toward the left where I can pause behind a building and watch Dorothy. Sure enough, Fionn comes out far before the count of 30 must be up. His head swivels each way, and then he looks down toward his feet. He must pick up enough of my tracks in the dust gathered on the worn path because he starts walking in my direction. Fucking cheater, I whisper through my wicked smile before I back away into the shadows. There are a handful of workers out and about today, either tightening up rides or restocking games with fresh prizes in preparation for our postponed next show. They hardly pay me any attention as I sneak through the grounds and backtrack so I can align with Fionn as he progresses down one of the aisles between game stands. I follow him for a distance, and when he seems to stall and his attention is caught in the wrong direction, I sneak up from behind and grab his hand.
What in the Jesus? You scared the shite out of me,
he says, his accent heavier in his moment of surprise.
Does this mean I win?
Fuck no.
Then what are you doing?
Toying with you.
And what about this?
He says, as he raises our interlaced fingers.
You're breaking some rules here. We're technically in public. And this is holding hands.
Oh, is it? I bat my lashes at him, and he gives me a flat glare in reply. Are you going to punish me? Desire flares in his eyes, a pool of black ink that consumes the vibrant blue.
Yes.
My smile stretches so wide that my cheeks ache. I give him a pat on the chest. You'll have to catch me first. Before I've even finished my sentence, I've ripped my hand from his and pivoted in the direction of the concession stands. I know he's right on my heels. I can hear his rapid footfalls. I can feel the weight of the hunt on me, the way his gaze lies heavily on my back. But he doesn't know this place like I do. I know every twist and turn, every hidden door, every little cubbyhole and safe place to find refuge. So when I gain enough ground in the network of structures, I duck into the storage hatch at the back of the hot dog stand and try to quiet my rapid breathing, clamping a hand across my mouth to stop the laughter that begs to be set free. I hear Fionn run past my hiding place, and then I lose all sense of sound except the heartbeat that roars in my ears. When it finally calms, I crawl out of my cramped little cage. I creep along slowly, crouching low to the ground, listening. Stopping. Starting again, just a few steps at a time. But no matter how many times I wait and listen, nothing comes. There's no sign of Fionn when I peer between the stands. No clues on the wind, no sounds in the air. Doubt claws its way into my mind. He probably gave up. Or maybe he's irritated that yet another one of our rules has been broken. I bet he went back to Dorothy. I can almost see him setting up my treadmill to run a 4-minute mile and then plop down on my couch with some trail mix and a disgusting vegetable smoothie while he crochets a runner for my folding table and watches some Surviving Love on his iPad. I don't know why I find all of that fucking adorable. Green juice should not be adorable, considering it tastes like licking the trampled grass of a fairground. Not that I've ever done that before, when I've lost a bet to Baz or anything. My head swimming with doubts, I take one last spin to assess my silent surroundings, and then I straighten, smoothing a hand over my jeans. I blow a long sigh toward my bangs, and then, with slow and careful steps, I start walking back in the direction of the games. I don't make it more than a dozen strides before a weight barrels into me. A steel band clamps across my waist. A palm traps a startled cry in my mouth. I'm lifted from the ground, and in a twist and turn of motion, I'm dragged into the dim light of a closed concession stand.
Did you think I wouldn't find you?
Every exhalation he breathes tickles the hairs at the back of my neck. My heart rate spikes. I whimper, but the sound is lost to the palm that covers my lips. He kicks the door closed behind him, throwing us into shadow.
So?
Fionn says. That one word hanging in the air with so much sharp and steady certainty that it could cut through it. He sets me down and walks us to the counter to press my hips against it, his erection hard against my ass. My belly clenches, a dull ache of need that demands his touch.
Why don't you show me what I've won?
His palm is still clamped to my mouth, my unsteady exhalation spilling over the edge of his hand. His lips graze the shell of my ear and my eyes drift closed. His whisper is an intoxicating mix of sweetness and menace when he says,
You said you had a surprise for me if I caught you. I'm dying to know what it is.
God, I could live in this moment of anticipation forever. This moment when desire burns so bright that it could incinerate every rule and condition. If we just added a splash more gasoline to the fire. In this moment, there is no aftermath, no coming back to our senses. The only way out is to give in. Fuck the consequences. Fionn takes his time to release each finger before he lifts his palm away.
Show me.
My heart climbs into my throat and lodges there. I toe off my shoes and with one hand undo the button of my jeans. I take my time with the zipper, willing myself not to rush. When it's finally at the last tooth, I slide the jeans and my panties over my hips, stepping out of them when they land at my feet. Check your pockets, I whisper, before he can figure it out. Fionn keeps one hand braced on the counter to cage me in, and with the other he pats down his jeans. A low hum resonates against my back as he brings a small bottle into view. A low chuckle escapes.
Boneyard snake oil cum lube,
he says as he reads the label.
I have to admit, I like the doctor theme.
And then he goes still behind me. I bite down on a wicked grin as he sets the bottle on the counter and takes a step back. His hands grip my ass cheeks and separate them. I twinkle my fingers in jazz hands. Surprise.
Jesus fucking Christ, Rose.
I turn enough so I can see his face over my shoulder. His eyes don't shift away from what I know he's staring at. The multicolored handle of the Tutti Frutti vibrating butt plug lodged deep in my ass. I went with the circus theme, too. Well, as close as I could get, anyway. A hard swallow shifts in Fionn's throat before his gaze returns to mine. His eyes are nearly black, his pupils blown. You seemed to be very interested in the ass-fucking idea when I said that I promised it to Chad. So, I took a bet that a little bit of anal might also be one of your things. If I'm wrong, though, Fionn presses me into the counter, grinding his hips against me. His hard length pushes against the handle of the toy.
Trust me, it's my fucking thing.
With another roll of his hips, he steps back again, then grasps the handle. My pussy clenches, my clit throbs, begging for relief. My core burns with need, and I want to beg him to turn on the vibration, but I stop myself. I want him to let himself out to play on his own terms. And play he does. He pulls the long, curved handle, sliding the toy out of my ass just a few inches before he pushes it back in again. Out and in. Out and in. With his free hand, he pushes my body down until it's flush with the counter and caresses my back. I brace my forehead on my folded arms and breathe through my increasing desperation to be fucked. The slow thrusts continue, and I feel the heat of my arousal on my inner thighs. I moan as he pushes the toy in as deep as it will go, and then, so slowly, I nearly beg he pulls it free.
Stay there. Don't move.
I shift just enough to watch as he takes the toy over to the sink and washes it with soap and water, patting it dry with paper towels when it's thoroughly clean. He turns to face me when he's done.
I'm going to need you to hold on to this because once I've filled your ass with cum, that's going back in. So open wide.
Though I fucking love the idea of everything he said until the open wide part, my nose scrunches. I'm not opposed, but I'm unsure. But then, inspiration strikes. I know exactly what will make this appetizing. My eyes dart to farther down the counter, and the motion doesn't go unnoticed by Fionn. He chuckles as he spots what I'm looking at. The cotton candy machine.
Okay, how does it work?
Switch it on, and then turn the volt knob all the way to the right. He does. The motor starts up and whirs as the heater in the center of the machine spins. Get the sugar from the tub under there, I say, nodding to the shelves next to him.
What color?
Surprise me. Fionn gives me a dark grin as he pulls out the tub of pink sugar. He follows my instructions to get a scoop ready, and when a minute or two passes, I tell him to turn the machine off and pour the sugar into the heater at the center of the drum. Now, turn it back on and catch the cotton candy. We laugh as he uses the toy to catch the floss as it flows from the heater. I teach him how to spin the plug to catch the sponge sugar in a ball. He probably gets half of it wound around his hand, but he grins. His face lit with a wide, uninhibited smile while he swirls more and more sugar around the toy until it runs out and he turns off the machine. When he's done, the Tutti Frutti butt plug is covered with a mound of pink candy floss.
How about now?
He asks. I open my mouth and he smiles. He slides the candy-covered plug into my mouth, and the burst of sweetness floods my tongue. My eyes flutter closed, and when they open, he's watching me, his expression ravenous. I slide the toy from my mouth slowly and gesture toward him with it, the colorful silicone now covered in dissolving pink sugar. I've never been fucked in the ass while eating cotton candy before. This is like every circus girl's dream. Fionn passes me the extra mound of pink floss gathered in his hand, and then steps behind me, loosening his belt.
Is it?
No, probably just mine.
I've never fucked a woman in the ass while she's eating cotton candy before either,
he says as he pops the cap of the bottle of lube and drizzles the cool, viscous liquid down the crack of my ass.
So, I guess we're even.
I wink at him over my shoulder and make a show of running the sugar-coated toy down the length of my tongue before I face forward. Anticipation in my veins is an electric hum. The sweetness in my mouth is the perfect accompaniment to his erection as he drags the tip through the lube, coating his cock. He is savoring every moment. He circles my pleated hole in a tease and then slides up the crack of my ass, then back down again, repeating the motion, taking his time. His hand caresses my arm in a wordless request to add more of the extra sugar to the toy, and I do. The tip of his cock presses to my hole in a slow pulse as I pull a section of cotton candy free and wind it around the body of the toy. And as I slide it back into my mouth, he pushes his way inside, slipping the tip of his erection past the tight ring of muscle.
Jesus fucking Christ,
he hisses, pausing with just the crown of his cock lodged in my ass. I'm already panting heavy breaths, desperate for more.
This tight little ass is fucking heaven, Rose.
He pushes in an inch deeper and I moan.
Tell me what you want.
He slides back until he's free and I whimper. A dark chuckle escapes him, and I swear that my blood is replaced with lava. He presses to my ass again and slides in deeper, my body shuddering. I pull the toy from my mouth. For you to fuck me the way I know you want to, without worrying about what will happen next. Fionn pauses. I glance over my shoulder and meet his eyes. It's as though the shell of him has cracked. And what's behind those splinters and shards is ravenous.
If you want me to stop, tell me or tap on my arm.
My reply is silence. I tear another piece of cotton candy free and wind it around the toy before I stick out my tongue and lay it on the surface. And then I turn on the vibration and face forward. A deep growl fills our shadows and Fionn thrusts all the way in. This is what I want. Deep, rocking strokes. My hips gripped in his hands, fingerprints on my skin. He thrusts into me, again and again, sliding out to the tip, pushing all the way in, fucking me without worrying about the consequences. What tomorrow will be like, what rules we might break. He picks up a pace, faster, harder. I pull the toy out of my mouth and moan as he pistons into me with merciless, feral need. The plug is still vibrating. I shimmy my hand between my body and the counter, its stainless steel edge biting into my forearm as I position the toy over my clit. My entire being seems to wind tighter, from my muscles to my veins to my mind. The orgasm builds in my core and I cry out, not thinking about where we are or who might hear us. Fionn's hand folds around my mouth to trap the sound in his palm, and then he bites down on the juncture between my neck and shoulder, and he drives into me. Wild with need, mindless and desperate, sparks invade my vision, and I come hard, my lungs burning, every muscle tightening. My ass clenches around his length, and Fionn roars my name. He pushes as deep as my body can take him, his length pulsing as he spills inside me, just like he promised. His hands land on either side of my head while his thrusts slow. His arms tremble, and my body feels weightless, my bones liquid, my thoughts still and quiet in the haze that hums in my mind like static on a radio.
Fucking hell, Rose,
Fionn says as he leans back. I still hear the unevenness in his breath. His body is fighting to recover. He starts to pull out, but he takes his time. And when I look back across my shoulder, he's watching the motion, taking in every inch as he slowly slides free. The moment the tip of his erection is free of my ass, he's taking the toy from me. He turns off the vibration. And then he positions it against my ass as I rasp out his name.
I told you I was going to fill you and put this back in,
he whispers as he slides it inside. I whimper, renewed need already building deep in my core.
You're going to keep that cum where it belongs, and I'm going to fuck you again when we get back to your RV. But in the meantime,
Fionn flips me over, landing my back on the counter and spreading my legs wide.
I'm going to make this pussy extra sweet.
I watch, riveted, as Fionn tears off a piece of cotton candy and lays it on his tongue. He lowers himself to my clit. His eyes don't leave mine as he passes a slow lick to my swollen butt of nerves. I lay my hand over his where it's splayed across my inner thigh. Our fingers lace, and he squeezes my hand, not letting go. And it's in this moment, with his eyes never straying from mine, this new wave of need building in my veins, that I know that when it comes to Fionn Kane, I will break every rule. And for the first time, I let myself wonder if he might one day feel the same.
Clause. Fionn. 1 year later.
Good luck tonight, Doc. Don't break your face. It's pretty, and I like to sit there. Winky face.
Thank you. I'll do my best. And even if it's broken, you'll still be on it. I promise you. Looking forward to tomorrow.
Me too. I've got to work at 7 p.m., so if your flight is late, just let yourself in.
I slip my phone into my bag and pull my shirt over my head before I put both into a locker. I should be thinking about what I'm about to do as I walk into the crowd, headed for the ring. I should be listening to the introduction and the rules as I slip between the ropes. I should be focused on my opponent. But I'm not. I'm thinking about Rose. I try to put space between us, but it never lasts. There's always a reason to pull us back together. Like Rowan and Sloane's wedding. I tried to tell myself to ease back and give us both some room to breathe. And what happened? We ended up fucking in the bathroom of Leytonstone Inn. We were just bringing shit to the venue the day before Rowan and Sloane's surprise elopement, and in less than 10 minutes of arrival, I had my mouth around her nipple and my cock buried in her pussy. Not to mention the wedding itself. Rose was so fucking beautiful in her bridesmaid dress. Her smile lit up with happiness for her friends. I ate her pussy in the staff room of the bar that night like it was my last goddamn meal. I would have found a way to do it in the courthouse too a few weeks later had we been there in person for Lachlan and Lark's unplanned nuptials. But it's not just the sex. That's only a bonus, if I'm being truly honest with myself. Every spare minute I want to spend with Rose. She's funny. She's whip smart. She's unpredictable. She lives her life with a wide open heart, like she loves every piece of herself and isn't afraid to show it. She embraces everything from her fucked up chaos to her brilliant, bright light. I admire her in a way I've never admired anyone, because it used to seem impossible to imagine what it would feel like to live that way. But she makes me think I could embrace myself and life the way she does. These things about myself that I've hidden away, the secrets and dark urges, she seems to sense them. And she's not afraid. And my own fears are eroding, replaced by need I couldn't shake even if I wanted to. A need to be with Rose. A need for more than what we have now. It's consuming me.
One cell at a time, one moment to the next. I don't see her nearly enough. When I'm not with her, it's fucking agonizing. I miss her presence in my house, how she made it a home. I miss it so goddamn much I've been keeping her plants alive and thriving for whenever she can visit, which is rarely, even though she's decided to spend the last couple of months in Boston, as the circus is getting closer to winding down for the season. She talks in non-committal terms when it comes up.
Thought I'd stick around Boston for a bit, see what all the fuss is about. I felt bad not being at Lark and Lachlan's wedding in person, and I could use some time off.
She said with a shrug when she first brought it up over a FaceTime call.
Barbara's doing great with Cheryl and the poodles. The twins can borrow my bikes until I get my bearings. And Baz needs a bit of freedom. I'll lend him Dorothy now that he can drive. You know, just a favor to his mom, give her a bit of a break.
She said the next week.
Besides, Lachlan said his place is empty. Might as well have someone to look after it, you know?
Yeah, of course, I'd replied, trying to sound equally nonplussed. Makes sense.
I've got a job in Saugus with an event company for now, just a temporary thing that Jose hooked me up with. But Rowan floated the idea of me working at 3 in coach for him once I'm finished with the Saugus Fright Fair gig. The restaurant's so busy. He said it would be a big help if I was interested in learning. If I can help keep a circus troupe in order, surely I can handle helping him manage the place, right? Might be kind of fun to try something new.
I had responded with something encouraging yet bland, not wanting to come off as too excited. The last thing I wanted was to scare her off, but in reality, I was fucking elated. And I haven't stopped thinking about it since. Not when I'm at work, not when I'm at home, lying in the dark, daring to imagine what a different future might be like. Not even now. My punch lands with a crack on Nate's cheek. His head snaps to the side. Spit flies from his mouth, but he stays upright. At least long enough for me to deliver another blow to his ribs. The crowd roars around us. Fire burns through my veins, a current of flame beneath sweat-slicked skin. I hit him with a right hook. Christ, it's so fucking satisfying. I keep thinking of that time I stitched him up as Rose watched. He was purposely pushing my buttons with his come-by-the-shop bullshit. I punch him again. A jab, another jab. When he threw his name in to battle it out with Killer Kane for a chance at dethroning me, I jumped to defend my undefeated streak. He's getting tired. His hits are weakening. His footwork is slow. I fake him out with the threat of a left jab, and then I throw all my momentum into a huge right hook. My fist lands on Nate's jaw. His head snaps back, and then he falls to the mat, unconscious. Satisfaction. The crowd goes feral. Tom counts down the seconds. Nate's head rolls from side to side. His legs slide across the stained and padded floor. But he doesn't get up. Hands raised in victory, I take a turn around the mat, my mouthguard hanging from a smile that's probably a little bit wicked. Then I manage to wrangle the darkness that seems to be thriving more and more with each fight, and I attend to the man lying at my feet. Though I tell him I'm sorry when he comes to, I don't think I really mean it.
Another excellent show,
Tom says, clapping me on the shoulder as Nate's friends help him out of the ring. I unravel the tape around my knuckles, testing out the pain that's mounting in my joints now that the adrenaline is already wearing off. Thanks.
Same again next month?
When I nod, Tom grins, passing me a clean towel for a gash I didn't even notice on my brow.
Better get that looked at, Dr. Kane. Might need a few stitches. You can pick up your cash tomorrow at my dealership.
Towel held to my bleeding face, I duck between the ropes and leave the ring. I pick up my bag from the locker and head through the crowd, nodding the occasional thanks to the spectators who pat me on the back and chant my name. But I'm not here for the attention or the money. I'm here to let my monster free
And there's only one thing that beast truly wants. To claw its way closer to Rose. My pulse spikes at the mere thought of seeing her soon, but I try to shake it off as I make my way into the bathroom, commandeering one of the two sinks in the small, run-down space that smells like piss and beer. The steps are mechanical to me. Wash hands. Gloves on. Sterilize the wound. I thread the needle, then face the mirror. I start the first stitch, leaning close to my reflection as I pierce my own flesh with the curved needle.
"Great fight, Dr. Kane,"
a voice says behind me. The monster inside me claws at my ribs.
"Mr. Cranwell,"
I lean back, pulling the thread taut. Our eyes meet in the mirror. Cranwell has a prosthetic eye now to lie over an ocular implant I already know he received in Omaha. The subtle difference is nearly indistinguishable from his uninjured eye. Both track me in the reflection.
"You're looking well. How you feeling?"
"Better than you,"
he says, as his gaze lands on the gash through my brow. I let out a quiet hmm and refocus on my wound, inserting the needle for the next stitch. The bite of pain is a welcome delicacy for the darkness in me to consume. It keeps my attention where it should be, away from breaking Matthew Cranwell's neck. Cranwell leans against the sink next to me, crossing his arms over his chest as he watches my progress.
"So, I heard the buttoned-up town doctor was not just mending wounds, but making them too. Had to come and see it for myself. It was a good show."
I nod my thanks.
"Do you think Eric Donovan put up a fight when your little girlfriend killed him?"
My eyes snap to his. Blood roars in my ears. The urge to rip his spine straight through his throat is overwhelming. The only thing that stops me is luck. Another man enters the bathroom, not noticing that we're staring each other down, me with my barely subdued rage. Cranwell with a smirk that I'm desperate to punch off his fucking ugly face.
"I have no fucking idea what you're talking about,"
I say when the man enters one of the stalls. Cranwell's grin stretches.
"Oh, right. She's not your girlfriend, is she? At least, that's what I heard. Probably a good thing for you. Don't want to have your perfect image marred by someone like Rose Evans."
An electric chill climbs through my flesh. I meant I have no idea about the other thing. You know as much as anybody around town that he's never been found, only his vehicle. You've no reason to be asking me anything about this.
Of course, silly me.
His head tilts. His eyes narrow.
"Are you sure about that, though? She was in your home for a couple of months after all. You sure you didn't see anything untoward?"
"If this is your attempt at an interrogation, I must say..." I turn my attention back to the mirror, starting the next stitch, swallowing the rage that threatens to tremble my hand. "It's fucking amateur and deeply unprofessional. But I guess that makes sense, considering the circumstances of your departure from the sheriff's office." Cranwell chuckles, scratching at the graying stubble on his chin.
"I ain't interrogating you, Dr. Kane. I'm just asking a simple question. Because from where I sit, it seems strange that she would be in Shiretown just moments before Donovan was last seen. A little thing like Rose Evans, buying a big old knife. But hell, what do I know?"
I shoot a cold glare in his direction, then pierce my brow and pull another stitch tight. "Well, Mr. Cranwell, I can confirm I don't know what you're talking about. And I'm not sure you do either. Eric Donovan is missing. He could be anywhere. He could have fucked off to Mexico for all we know. The kinds of allegations you seem to be dancing around are extremely serious." Cranwell's smile stretches, a predator ready to take down the competition in its domain. There's a threat behind every wrinkle of weathered flesh. Every movement of muscle and bone.
"Did you know someone about her size did this to me?"
he asks as he gestures to his eye.
"A woman. Hit me and stabbed me right in the eye. For no reason. Came onto my property entirely unprovoked.
Sounds to me like you don't know who did it, and I wonder why someone would want to attack you unprovoked. It's not like you've done that to anyone else, right? I knot another stitch and wipe the blood from my brow before I start the next. Oh, I heard Lucy moved to her parents' place in Minnesota and took the kids with her. I'm so very sorry for the dissolution of your marriage. I wonder, what could have precipitated that? A flash of rage passes across Cranwell's face. But he doesn't risk lashing out, not as a couple of guys from the gym enter the bathroom and nod in my direction.
No fucking idea,
he finally says. I'm sure. Now, if you'll excuse me, I have something to attend to. Oh, and Mr. Cranwell, I say, letting my eyes drop down the length of him and back up again. I'm afraid I can no longer be your doctor. I hope you'll understand. With a final, cutting glance, I focus on my reflection, harnessing every last thread of restraint to keep myself from killing the man next to me.
That's probably for the best, for both of us,
he says, clapping me on the shoulder just as I pierce my skin with the needle. The point scrapes within my flesh.
Have a great night, Dr. Kane.
I don't look at him as he leaves the bathroom. I just finish my stitches, a line of 10 that curves from my forehead to the swollen flesh of my upper eyelid. When I'm done, I pack my supplies, throw away my gloves and the gauze and the towel that's stained with slashes of crimson. I toss on a shirt and a hoodie, splash some water on my face. And then I grip the edges of the sink. I lean closer to the old mirror, the surface marred by scratches and imperfections. I don't think I recognize the man looking back at me anymore. And maybe I like it. I leave without another word to anyone, going home and straight into the shower. Despite the pain and the rage and the anxiety swirling in my guts, I still think of Rose. When I shut my eyes, I can see her face, her lips parted, eyes hooded and locked on me. I can hear her moans, her phantom touch is there on my back, caressing my shoulders. I grip my erection and imagine sinking into her tight pussy. Her desperate cries roll through my mind, swelling and falling in the same pace as I stroke my cock. Every detail is so clear. The feel of her flesh beneath my palms, the peak of her nipples, the blush in her skin. I can't help myself. In my fantasy, I lean closer, closer and closer and closer, until I slant my mouth over hers and dissolve into a kiss I've imagined more times than I can count. It's this moment that throws me over the edge. This forbidden, broken rule that has